At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hello, and welcome to Two Words Wolves Pod. I'm Ryan Eichton, and with me is Leo San. Leo, how you been doing?
You know, we're all a little rusty, Ryan. I mean, I feel like the season's been over. We shifted into off-season mode here, and I don't know, man. I think it's somewhat relieving now that the Wolves season is over, and I say this with an obvious tone of, you could say, confusion or inexperience, because, I mean, how many times have Wolves fans throughout their, you know, couple decades here of being in existence have had consecutive successful seasons like this where they made deep playoff runs? And so we're trying to get used to having expectations of the team and enjoying winning. I almost don't know how to act when it's like, okay, well, we didn't win a championship, but we made it really far. Should I feel good? Should I feel bad? I don't know. Because I feel like, especially the first two series of the playoffs against the Lakers and the Warriors, like personally for me, but even just Wolves fans in general, even out in Minnesota or around the world, you know, those are kind of anxious series. We're playing against the LeBrons, the Lakers have, you know, kind of always had our number. We're playing against the Golden States and Draymonds, where it's like, oh, there's a lot at stake here. So it's like very, very anxiety driven. But, you know, the OKC series even, it's like maybe it wasn't that personal, but it was kind of like staring down the impending doom for 9 days. Like, all right, we kind of knew what was coming, like prepared to get steamrolled. So, you know, I think as a true Wolves sicko, I think you can totally understand where I'm coming from. I'm kind of in my comfort zone during the offseason, like looking up obscure prospects, like dreaming of free agents, you know, eagerly awaiting G League deep cuts that'll appear on the Las Vegas Summer League roster. Like, I'm ready for Tristan Newton, baby. Like, you know, I'm excited. I'm looking up, you know, Nolan Traore, like mixtapes from Europe. Like, that is where I live. Like, I won't be ashamed to admit, I've looked up more than my fair share of Matteo Spagnuolo, like, game logs. I'm like, how's he doing? We still have rights to that guy? You know, I'm still looking for Tanguy Ngombo. You know, this is where I like it. So, yeah, it's been a weird time, but I feel at ease, man. How about you, Ben? How have you been? I know you've been doing these live reacts, but, you know, how's life been post-Wolf season?
Yeah, it's been good. Gotten a little bit of relaxation time. Not as many late nights at Target Center of late, although the Lynx are 7-0, so I'll have to get back to Target Center here soon. But yeah, it's been interesting. I don't know if we want to, how much we want to talk about the OKC series. I don't think you and I have really discussed at all that series. It kind of came and went so fast. But like my bigger picture thoughts are just like, this team is in a really good spot overall. And as I watched like the Eastern Conference Finals and thought about those two teams, I think you could make the case, and I think other teams can make this case too, that the Wolves are the second best team in the NBA. I would almost put them in a tie with like a bunch of other teams like Denver, Philly, New York, Boston, pre-Tatum injury. Did I say Philly?
You said Philly, and I just want to make Indiana, sure. Strike that from the record, please.
I meant to say Indiana, Cleveland, Boston.
All right, got you.
Denver. All those teams are all, I think, in the same general kind of bucket to me, and then you have obviously OKC who handled the Wolves. So I think you kind of take pride in that. It's not worth like, are they better than Indiana? Are they better than XYZ? Whatever. But like, you take pride in kicking the Lakers. But I think like one thing, I still think the Wolves beat the Warriors even if Steph is healthy. I think their performance in that series kind of goes unnoticed because of obviously Curry getting hurt and how brutal game one was. And then obviously the Oklahoma City series is bad and game three was fun and they should have won game four. I really am curious where that series goes if the Wolves win game four. I kind of have a feeling that it would have been like a series where the home team wins every single game. But ultimately, yeah, I just like where the Wolves are at. It's been funny watching like Warriors fans and Lakers fans complain about the Wolves going out quick in that series. It's like, well, if we're not very good, what does that say about your guys' team? And then the one thing I've just been flabbergasted with, I mean, Denver should take pride in the fact that they took Oklahoma City to 7, but also they were like, oh, we would have made the finals if we would have won that game 7. And I'm just like, Denver had no shot against the Wolves. Not because they're any worse, but one, I mean, the Wolves swept them in the regular season, but like Aaron Gordon was hobbling out there. Michael Porter Jr. was hurt. Joel Murray wasn't showing himself. Like, Denver wasn't going to, I mean, again, they should be, Denver's as good as any team in the West, I would say, other than obviously Oklahoma City. But it's just been weird to see the takes kind of, as the Wolves go out early, kind of progress.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it for me, and I agree with you, Ryan, it's like, you know, I'm extremely proud. I mean, listeners at this point know how I feel about the Lakers, and obviously we have our history with the Warriors, and I grew up in Northern California, so you know, I'm really happy about that. I think a lot of it comes down to, like, if you believe sports is a zero-sum game, where it's like, you either win a championship, or, like, all of it is pointless. And I think as Wolves fans, those of us who've been around for, you know, more than the last 4 or 5 years know that it's about the journey. You know, it's not always about winning a championship. Otherwise, then why are we here? And so I think, you know, you take pride in, like, the progress that they made. I wouldn't go so far as to say that the road to the NBA Finals in the West has to go through Minnesota. You know, it's obviously have to go through OKC right now, but I would say one of the main on-ramps, it has to go through Minnesota for sure. You know, I think we've proven that. You know, you've made great points about the Nuggets, and you know, there are other good teams, but, you know, Law Murray, he covers for The Athletic for the LA Clippers. He put out a tweet shortly after the Wolves, I think, lost to the Thunder. He had said that, you know, people were asking, oh, who do you think the second best team is then in the West? You know, is it Denver or is it someone else that would have given the Thunder a better matchup? But he's like, no, I mean, honestly, the Wolves have earned that number two spot throughout the last two seasons. Like, you know, there's nothing we can say that they shouldn't be the number two team. Now, again, how big is that gap between one and two? You know, a lot bigger than it is between two and three, probably. Yeah, sure. But yeah, you know, again, I'm happy with the season. I'm at peace with it. You know, we made it a lot further than we thought we were going to. We're in a great place, which we'll dive into a little bit as we talk about some of these press conferences and exit interviews. But yeah, it was a good year. Good year for sure.
Yeah. And I guess we'll just kind of start by diving into some of that year, because I think it's fair to be frustrated by the Oklahoma City series. Like I said, that game four, I think everything kind of frustrating about the Wolves came out in that game four. In the game five, like just the disaster that was game five, I think those two games combined are just perfect example of like where this team and this franchise need to improve. I was fairly frustrated about just them not even, like, they let go of the ropes so early in that game five, maybe even before the game even started, it felt like, right? And certainly once Jaden missed like those first couple wide open threes, it's just like And I kind of felt, especially before game four, what was most frustrating was I didn't feel like Ant had the proper, like, respect for the moment, in the sense of, like, you saw in game three the way he came out, just ready to blitz everything and ready to just be that guy. And they did everything right that game, and the winning by 40-plus is insane. But, like, you just saw him revert kind of back to just, like, feeling the game out. And it's just, like, I don't know why that can't continue for every game for him. And like the finals was still right there for them. A championship was right there for them in that game four. And the biggest thing I thought was weird to criticize him was like not forcing it more. Not like his offensive process was fine. Like his shot to pass ratio was great. He was making the quote unquote right plays, but like his defense wasn't there that game. His rebounding wasn't there that game. And like just like the attention to detail right from the first tip wasn't there. And so like that's just, and then that carries over in game five where not just him, everyone kind of just craps the bed. Yeah, those are my two biggest frustrations. And I think if you can't carry those frustrations without acknowledging the success up until that point and vice versa, I just think you're like, people are missing the point if they're kind of only focusing on like one of those two areas. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'll admit that I was wrong, I think, in my prediction that Ant will be the best player in that series. I mean, clearly he was not, but my prediction was that, you know, he's kind of biding his time because he talks so much about how in 2024 he's quite gassed against the Mavs, kind of didn't have his legs, and you know, all that type of thing. So I thought that Ant was really saving himself to be able to come out full strength against the Thunder. But I mean, again, he had, like you said, a great game three. He's made, you know, some solid plays. You know, he was, like you said, that shot to pass ratio was great. But I was a little surprised, I think, by the rest of his teammates, just about how kind of deer in the headlights they were, whether it was Dante not having a good game or Nikhil just absolutely smoking two layups in that game five, Jaden just going ice cold from the corner. I know that's the right shot for him to take, and he had been making them fairly well, but it's like, you know, he also has been so effective catching, attacking off the catch too in those corner situations. And so, you know, it just kind of felt like it's Naz Reid, if not the most out of all of them, where it's just like, you were just here last year. You know, you should be kind of used to this, but they just really kind of froze up. But, you know, it is what it is. And I think they take it as a learning experience. I would hope that maybe, you know, last year Ant was a little bit too over aggressive and exerted himself too fast. And this year maybe he's a little bit too passive this year in terms of, like, you know, putting the game on his back and really, you know, again, it doesn't have to be scoring 40 points a game, but being a little bit more aggressive and attacking. You know, hopefully next year, you know, he'll find that right balance, because now he's kind of seen a little bit of both sides of it.
Yeah, and I think if you go back and listen to our preview pod, obviously we were wrong about X, Y, and Z, but I do think one thing that, like, ages well is, like, whatever key factors we pointed out were key factors in that series. Like you said, you thought Ant would outplay him, but I think we both would have agreed if Shea was going to outplay Ant by this degree, it was going to be really tough for the Wolves to win the series. If you look at, like, the benches, at best, the Wolves bench played even to OKC, and I think OKC's bench won by a good margin. If we would have told you that was going to happen, the Wolves would be in trouble. Turnovers, Wolves couldn't stop turning the ball over. That was something we would have pointed out. Offensive rebounding, I think I pointed to something like the Wolves need to do well in this category, and they did the opposite. And then, like, stuff like Chet and Jalen Williams completely outplaying Rudy and Julius Randle. That was where I thought, like, Jalen Williams is a big key to that series, where he didn't play all that great, or at least played inconsistently against Denver, and was awesome in the four wins for OKC. So, frustrating series, but ultimately, I think, as we'll talk about here, the season as a whole, or really not even the season as a whole, but how they were able to play down the stretch of the season was important.
Yeah, you know, it's easy to go back and think about, like, oh, well, it was because of this or because of that. But at the end of the day, I think when it comes down to brass tacks, I mean, the Thunder are just a better team. And there's no indication to show that, oh, the Wolves should have beaten them, or like, oh, well, they were 2-2 during the regular season, so, you know, maybe they should have won, you know, it should have been closer. Where it's like, no, I mean, like, you just look at a lot of the, you know, the numbers, the, you know, rating, defensive ratings, point differentials, you know, all the numbers were indicated that the OKC Thunder, you know, obviously why they were betting favorites, should have beaten the Wolves. Now, yeah, I mean, we were close, and you said if we could beat the Thunder, if we had maybe taken game four, who knows what could have happened. But, you know, there's no shame in this result at all. And I know you don't feel it. I know I don't feel it. And hopefully, again, some of the Wolves fans that maybe haven't been around as long are used to seeing the Wolves make it, you know, multiple rounds past the playoffs, don't take it too personally in terms of, oh, well, then we're screwed.
Yep. And OKC is going to be in their way probably for a while, and they'll have to play better than they did to overcome them. But that's a problem for next season as we move into our Apex Alpha, not just for the week, but our Apex Alpha for the season. I'm going to go with Chris Finch, which is probably not what people would have chosen for themselves, just because the amount of frustration that has been directed at Finch has been a lot. Certainly, I think we've had issues with certain decisions they've made. And those opinions still stand to a certain extent. And he even, Finch, mentioned, like, this wasn't a fun season for him. And I think everyone could kind of see that for not just Finch, but a lot of the inner workings of the Timberwolves. Fun, well, rewarding in the end. Fun wasn't necessarily the word they would describe. But I just think Finch did such a good job with the tough hand that he was given. The trade right before the season presented a lot of challenges, kind of similar to the Rudy trade two seasons ago, except they didn't have nearly as much time to, like, the Rudy trade, they had all summer to figure what out they wanted to do. And this trade, they had days or weeks. And it looked rough for most of the season. Like, coming into March, they were basically out of the play-in briefly before, I mean, just, you just told us that the March 1st, that version of that team is going to make the Western Conference Finals. I don't think anyone would have believed that. So I think what the job he was able to do, because I do think there is, like, for a lesser team or lesser group of people, this season could have gone the way that like Phoenix's series season did, or Dallas's season, or Sacramento season, where the bottom kind of falls out and they miss the playoffs, or in Phoenix's case, miss the playing tournament altogether. Like, I think that was a scenario that could have happened, or even just like the scenario we saw that first season with Rudy, where they make the playoffs, they needed to beat, which it's interesting to juxtapose. They made the playoffs that year by crushing the up and coming Oklahoma City squad. It's interesting to juxtapose where that franchise is now just two seasons later. But, and then they face the eventual champion Nuggets, and obviously they have a bunch of injuries. Jaden's out, Nas gets hurt. Well, there's someone else that gets hurt mid, Kyle Anderson gets hurt mid series. Like, they didn't give themselves a chance to even win a playoff series. And that could, I mean, if they win two fewer games, they're the eight seed or whatever, and they're going to Oklahoma City, and they probably lose that series in five, like they did the Western Conference Finals in five. And like, we're totally viewing this whole thing as differently. So I think a lot of credit goes to Finch for being able to navigate that whole thing, because I think a lesser coach would have gotten swallowed by it.
Yeah, I like you picking Chris Finch. We talk about, you know, levers to pull, buttons to push, and all that type of jazz. And when you really think about it, what combination of buttons and levers would Finch have had to press to get the result that the Wolves ended up in the Western Conference Finals, right? Like, maybe there was a scenario where he had a 1% chance or a 0.5% chance where he could have got them all the way to the finals, even won a championship. But he still finished in that, like, 95th, 97th percentile of like best outcome for the Wolves. And, you know, I think for all, as frustrated as a lot of us were, and myself included, if we listen to just kind of the talking heads, you know, Wolves social media or what a comment section, but they're like, oh man, he really needs to play the young guys. Like, he needs to mash, put Rob in. You know, I think even at one point we did a season where it's like, is it time to really kind of punt on the season and start building for next year, right? And imagine if we did that. I mean, would we have been more happy, say we just completely missed the playoffs, and then now we're looking at bigger questions like, oh, well, what are we going to do with Randall? Because obviously we didn't even make the playoffs with them. Or what are we going to do with Nas? Like, he doesn't deserve, you know, there's so many more questions now. We didn't actually go through, he didn't hammer home those top 8 minutes together. And again, it's one of those things where Finch did such an excellent job, and I get so, I don't want to say annoyed, but it's a little frustrating to hear social media, and again, Canis Who Miss comment section, where they're like, oh man, Finch's got to go. He's proven twice in a row he can't get past the Western Conference Finals, where it's like, first of all, like, you know, again, if it's a zero-sum game for you, where it's a championship or bust, and okay, whatever. But seconds, who are you replacing him with? Are you going with Mike Malone? Are you going with Mike Brown? Like, you know, who are the best people out there that are going to get the most out of Ant? Who's going to get the most out of Julius Randle? I mean, these are very, very real questions. That's like, you know, you want to start over? You want to do this whole rotating carousal of head coaches that Ant's going to have to go through, that we saw, you know, a Cat have to go through. We saw a Kevin Love have to go through, right? It's like, you know, do we want to repeat history again right there? So, yeah, I love Chris Finch as your answer here.
Yeah. Who you got, Leo, for your Apex Alpha of the Year?
Yeah, well, I'm going also kind of big picture wise. For my Apex Alpha, for I guess you can say for the season, is Tim Connolly, our president of basketball operations. He had a press conference, which we'll get into later today. But I think TC really proved that this trade, you know, though it was risky, and he admitted that, you know, came at a tough time right before the season, you know, right before training camp, that it was risky, but it was a measured decision that he made. That he bet that Finch would be able to get the most out of Randle, you know, in this allotted time. He would be able to get the best out of this team at that time. And so, you know, that sudden bomb that he dropped on the team still resulted in a net positive outcome for the season. And, you know, there's even more fruits to enjoy in the future with this as well too, right? Whether we're talking about the financial flexibility or having an extra, you know, wing player that, you know, is on a very, very team-friendly contract for a while. I mean, he pressed the right buttons. And again, I think it's just kind of funny because when we talk about, like, you know, that Rudy trade, this season was so much of almost like the last couple of seasons where we made that Rudy trade. It's like, oh my God, here we go, blowing it up. You know, this is a terrible move. Tim Connolly to come in and make these huge changes to the starters. And then, you know, yeah, it was kind of a rough season due to injury, but then bounced back. And then this year again, same thing. Big, huge trade, traded the longest tenured, you know, Timberwolves player for, you know, who for the longest time since probably KG. And then all of a sudden, you know, things work out. So again, he's shown that he knows what he's doing. And I think for you and I'm sure he's long earned our trust, you know, seasons ago now. But I think this year is really like, you know, I don't think we as a fan base really have a right to judge, like, okay, well, he has no idea. He's just making random trades, you know, without thinking about what the immediate impact would be.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you think about the two big trades that I think obviously people didn't like in the moment were obviously the Rudy Gobert trade is much panned, and I don't know, you can still quibble that they shouldn't have given away X asset or whatever, but it's hard not to view that as just an unmitigated success with Ant making back-to-back Western Conference Finals at the age of 23. The list of players that have done that at his age are slim. The only people like in the NBA that like right now that have done it would be like, I think it's just Tatum and Luka if you add 1 year. Like it's, and even Tatum was not, Tatum the first year they made it was like I think like in his Isaiah Thomas team. Like it wasn't,
I think it's a Gordon Hayward team. Yeah.
Isaiah right. Thomas. So it's a little different from what Ant's got going on. And obviously, like Tatum's ceiling is what we'd all hope to for Ant, I think, would be like a fair, I mean, they won a title with him as the best player. That'd be a fantastic outcome, obviously. So that trade, I don't know how you don't view the Rudy Gobert trade as a success at this point, especially if you watch Utah just languish in no man's land. And then obviously the Cat trade, and we'll talk about it later, but they were able to go back to the Western Conference Finals after trading their franchise cornerstone. I don't know how, obviously Ant is now the cornerstone or franchise title or whatever you want to call Cat. He's this, when they traded him, he was the second greatest player in the history of the franchise. Since now he's third, obviously with Ant surpassing that by a good margin now, but yeah, both of those were not easy trades to make. And I guess the only like, how many decisions, even big or small, have not worked out? The only one that like lingers now is like the potential that Rob Dillingham doesn't work out. And I think both of us would probably like rule that incomplete at this point. Like we don't know how it'll take years for that to play out, whether that was the right move. But yeah, it's hard not to be impressed with what he's been able to do here. And they got another offseason of upheaval to do. So this offseason might be his toughest job.
Yeah, I mean, if we're quibbling about giving up a very, very, very future first-round pick for a number 8 pick that hasn't panned out in year one, who is only 20 years old, you know, I think that's a statement to how good his other decisions have been, right? So, you know, I think the second most controversial move that he's made is maybe waiving Dacian Nix, you know, vibes captain, I guess. But yeah, I mean, honestly, yeah, it's just such a great job, and I think, you know, you think about sometimes like some of the ineptitude that exists in those really kind of bottom feeding franchises. I mean, they're rotating through front office people over and over and over again. So we'll have a little bit about that later. But I think he's definitely him and Finch, I think, guiding the way forward. And hopefully with A-Rod and Mark Laurie, I mean, you know, we'll see how that future goes with them. But hopefully, you know, with a steady hand moving forward, it'll bring a little bit of stability, but also with a progressive and successful history with them. So
yeah, and we'll have, like you mentioned, Tim spoke to the media today, including myself, so we'll leave the rest of the Tim discussion for that. But next, usually we do Pray of the Week, but we're gonna make it Pray of the Year, and mine was the state of California. To go back to the two playoff series they won, I mean, I just think, like, I hope people can, like, really sit the Minnesota Timberwolves in the same postseason, beat the Los Angeles Lakers, like, the marquee franchise of the NBA, and the Golden State Warriors, the marquee franchise of the past 10 or so years in the NBA. They eliminated both of those teams. Two of the, I mean, LeBron and Steph are two, obviously they didn't really defeat Steph, but, like, those are two of the greatest throughout, even at 15 is probably too low for Steph, but whatever. 10 to 15 players ever. And that's not even including Luka, obviously, in the Lakers series. Like, I think we shouldn't, like those were impressive series, especially the Lakers series. I don't know, like, obviously, like, there was tough moments in the Golden State series and obviously OKC. But, like, how do you not be impressed by that Lakers series? Like, everyone is picking the Lakers to make the West Finals. Everyone. And the Wolves beat them in 5 games. And just like the, like similar to the OKC series, like the Wolves never gave the Lakers any chance to win the series. And then back-to-back conference finals, I think, is just something that we would have, I mean, certainly midway this year, we would have thought is insane. But even a few years ago when this team was languishing after the Butler fallout, to be able to have consistent playoff success, I think is just like, making it to the West Finals once was amazing, and obviously the Denver Game 7 still is the greatest win in the history of the franchise. But to be able to do it again, I think it's just so important to like prove, like any team can do it once. I was thinking about all like the really good teams that didn't make two West Finals. Like I think about Mike's grit and grind Memphis team. They only made it once. Like Portland's teams with Lillard and McCollum only made it once. And that Portland team lost to the Durant Warriors in four. Like there's a lot of how many West Finals did the James Harden Houston Rockets make? Two, I think, probably. Like you can put together a great basketball team and only make the West Finals once or twice. And for the Wolves to be able to do that, I just think before we kind of start killing them for any XYZ reason of the Oklahoma City series, I think you have to, any recollection of this season has to start with both the run they went through at the end of the regular season combined with the two playoff series wins over the California teams.
Yeah, Ryan, I don't think there's ever been a better time to be a Timberwolves fan living in California. That is for me right now. I would say, you know, I'm in my, you know, mid late 30s here and, you know, having to be able to, and I would say getting to go into work and to talk about, anytime someone wants to talk about, oh, what happened to your Timberwolves? I'll be like, aren't you a Laker fan? Like, who are you talking to? Like, watch your mouth a little bit. No, but it's kind of funny, though. I think you might think that being hyperbolic, but honestly, anytime I'm having, like, I'm getting annoyed, I stubbed a toe, I hit, like, three red lights in a row, and I'm getting a little frustrated by, you know, I need a little new little thing in the day. I just really think back to, you know what? The Wolves beat the Lakers in five games in the playoffs, eliminated them, sent them to Cancun. I'm like, you know what? It's all good. Like,
Very LA of you that the second most frustrating thing behind stubbing your toe you could think of was traffic related. It's very LA of you.
Yeah, you know, so that's true. But I mean, seriously, though, I mean, it is definitely one of those, even some of the casuals. There's this coworker of mine, and I don't think she really follows sports much at all, especially not the NBA. But she's like, oh, yeah, aren't you like a Timberwolves fan? How did they do this year? I'm like, oh, we're already out this year, but we had a good year. She's like, are you sure you're not coping? I was like, no, we beat the Lakers and the Warriors, even for them. Like she didn't really follow the NBA. She's like, oh wow, you beat the Lakers and the Warriors. Like, yeah, we did. You know, which is like felt really good to kind of, you know, even for casuals to acknowledge that happened. So yeah, absolutely. You know, I think, you know, I will happily take the L as a Californian that the Wolves kind of, you know, ran them over. And I think when we talk about the back-to-back conference finals, I think you mentioned it. There's a lot of luck that goes into this. Things have to break right. It's not say it's 100% luck, but a big chunk of it has to be luck. And so when you do it once, it's so easy to chalk it up, right? Like, oh, the, you know, Conley Grizzlies, the Green Grad Grizzlies got lucky a year or whatever. When you do it twice, it's hard to say, oh, the Wolves just got lucky 2 years. Like, yeah, of course, something's broken our favor, but some things also didn't break in our favor. I don't recall how many of us wanted to face the Lakers in the first round. You know, it was like one of those things, right? Like, oh man, like, you know, we just happened to land against the second best team in the West with two Hall of Fame players on their team, you know, where it's like.
Or just think of the sliding doors moment. I think I remember watching in the locker room after they had clinched the playoffs and where we were waiting on, what was the game, Clippers Warriors, which was determining where they were going to go. I mean, so it was like they were either going to get the Lakers series that they ended up getting, or they were going to be the five seed going against Denver. I still think they would beat Denver in a series, but to call that anything more than a coin flip, I think would be unfair to Denver. Yeah. But even if you think the Wolves would run through Denver, like the healthy version of round one Denver, they don't make the West Finals if they're the five seed, because they're going up against Oklahoma City in the second round. Exactly. Well, I do think like OKC in the second round would have been easier. I think they like gained a lot of what they needed in that Denver series. I think it'd be disingenuous to think the Wolves would have beaten them in any series. So like, if you're specifically talking about the West Finals and you talk about like they got a little bit of, I don't know, luck or whatever you want to call it in that sense, but they also made a lot of their own luck, because like, do they make the West Finals if they're the seven seed and they have to place Memphis in the play-in? They were one game away from that, and they only lost like four games down the stretch of the season. So it'd be disingenuous to ignore the luck factor or whatever term you want to use. But obviously, and the flip side is you also make your own luck, and the Wolves did that down the stretch of the season.
Billy Zane, a real man makes his own luck. Now, I mean, you can really put the whole Western Conference kind of in this. I mean, even, you know, you think about that last game the Wolves won. I mean, you saw who they played. They played the Utah Jazz, the team that fleeced the Timberwolves in the Gobert trade. And in that game, I mean, yeah, obviously we won that game pretty handily, but Ant goes off, you know, beats Malik Beasley for the three-point record. You know, you have so many things that just kind of like line up where it's like, man, like, you know, we should be pretty fortunate about that. So, yeah, I like your pray, California, for that. For me, my pray of the week, I'm going to kind of angle a little bit differently here. I'm going to talk about cat apologists are the prey. And I will go ahead and lump myself in there as well, too. I am a big cat fan. I am like non-apologetically a cat stan. But, you know, maybe it wasn't necessarily the Wolves' fault, but I mean, we've seen this movie before. I mean, Cat in the series against the Pacers, amongst all the starters, he had the best plus minus. That was going around on social media. And yet he's the only one that we've seen so many trade proposals pop up saying like, oh, you know, they got to trade him for, you know, to get KD or package him for Giannis thing or whatever the case is. They're like, oh, this guy can't defend. Like, you know, what the hell? Like, you know, we need a better center, you know, than Cat or whatever, where it's like, he didn't just like single-handedly pull them to one of their only wins against the Pacers. I mean, you know, New York lost in six, and I get it. You know, it's a frenzied and passionate fan base. But I think, you know, some things just never change. I think, you know, for us Cat apologists, I mean, I saw so many Wolves fans hop into the mentions almost defending the Knicks and Cat, saying like, hey, look, Cat got you all to like the furthest that you've ever been in however many years. You know, they won more games in the conference finals than they did the previous year. So. Not previous year, but like, you know, more games and in the playoffs for them. So, yeah, you know, I think, you know, at the end of the day, because the Wolves played so well as well, too, I think, you know, some Knicks fans look at it like, oh, man, we had, you know, that prime Julius Randle that was giving Draymond Green the business. Maybe he could have stopped, you know, Pascal Siakam or, oh, man, instead of Josh Hart, imagine if we had Dante DiVincenzo in there, where it's kind of like, you know, it made, you know, a lot of that, oh, this Cat trade, you know, was the worst of all time for the Wolves, kind of the prey for me.
Yeah, it's been really interesting for me watching Knicks fans or Knicks Twitter, or even just basketball media at large that watches the Knicks more than the Wolves. Watching them speed run the Cat narratives in 1 year has been both hilarious and frustrating. I mean, countless things I saw that were just like, wait, you guys didn't know this? We figured this out 7 years ago. Like the Tibbs playing him in drop. Thought we all agreed, like, Cat is not a drop center. Either got a, like, obviously Mitchell Robinson was hurt most of the year, but, like, that's the type of matchup that where he's at now, and you have to try to figure out, like, he's not as good at the four with the true center playing with him. Like, you got to figure that out. Like, the Wolves tried that for two seasons. Like, where were you guys? I saw people complaining about he's getting hacked, never gets any calls. So it's like, I was saying that for years. I had a toxic relationship. Maybe people argue I still do, but like I had a toxic relationship with the NBA officiating because of Cat alone, because I was being driven insane by the calls that Cat wouldn't get, and then other players would do the exact same stuff, and like I complained so much less about the refs this year just because Cat wasn't on the roster, because like there it just wasn't as frustrating to deal with. So it's just like, where was that? And now that they've lost, all the blame goes on Cat. Cat stinks. It's defense. It's this or that. It's like, we did this already. I mean, the Knicks fans didn't, but we did this already. All this we've done. And so to me, like, what's frustrating is, like, why did you trade for him? They put out a piece that all the players, not like, the Athletic had a piece that the Knicks were frustrated with Cat's defense. And it's just like, yeah. We knew this. If you were just going to trade for him, play him drop center, have him play like Jimmy Butler's on his team again, why did you trade for him? If you're going to have Cat on your roster as your starting center or as your starting forward playing once Mitchell Robinson is healthy, you have to prioritize him in some way. And so when your offense is Jalen Brunson save us, and Cat, the number of threes he took this season and especially this playoffs with the Knicks is just like kind of a joke. Like his biggest weapon, you weren't utilizing nearly enough. I mean, he never shot enough threes here either, but it's just like, I'm so confused. Like that'd be my biggest thing with the Knicks is just like, what was the plan here? Besides, and it was, I would still say it's a good trade for them because things were not going well with Julius and the Wolves were standing firm on needing Dante in the pick that they eventually got to be in the trade. But I just, the Twilight Zone episode of it all, it feels like a mandala effect where it's just like, did Cat's 9 years in Minnesota even happen? Were you guys even, just kind of shows how few people I think were watching that era, which we knew, but like we're really watching Cat before, because I just, so much of the criticism of Cat this whole year, and even when he, like, the extra praise he got when he was playing well, I felt like he was doing 95% of that here too. It's just been, the Cat narratives all year have been insane, and I don't want him to get traded because I think the Knicks are pretty good, and especially in that weak year Eastern Conference, like, their path to the finals is still there. Having him in a different media market might not be the worst thing for him.
Yeah, I'll do you one better even, Ryan. I mean, you talk about, like, didn't we ever see this with Cat? I mean, didn't we already see this with Tibbs? Like, oh, he just was not playing Cat the right way. Like, pulling him away from the three-point line, like, one of his best weapons. I mean, he's shooting, you know, career lows in three since Tibbs last coached him, you know, in Minnesota. And, like, you know, Tibbs running him into the ground. I mean, Cat was severely injured by the end of the series. I mean, again, a lot of it, you can chalk it up as bad luck, but how many times when Tibbs starters get injured, is it bad luck? Versus Tibbs kind of running him into the ground till discovering in seemingly game six of the Eastern Conference Finals that you can play players that aren't in his normal top seven or eight rotation. You know, I think it's just kind of a thing, you know, we've seen it before, and I could get maybe why Knicks fans are so frustrated with it, because yeah, sure, maybe they weren't watching Minnesota, but like, you know, Cat, again, I think he played really well for them all in all, you know, when you consider the entire Knicks postseason run. But like, I mean, you look at how Julius Randle played for the Wolves, was not quite the Julius Randle that played for the Knicks when he was on in the playoffs for them. So they're kind of like, oh man, like Julius Randle turned into this like MVP, you know, fringe top 25 NBA player in the playoffs. And then Cat just is remaining a steady top 15, you know, type of dude, top 20, you know, type of dude the whole time. Where it's like, well, why didn't he elevate to? I don't know. You know, Knicks fans are, you know, again, notoriously a little bit emotional, you know, for better or worse. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. And I think I would, when I get frustrated with Tibbs, I think it's mostly the Tibbs and Cat pairing just seems fraught to me. It's not even like interpersonal thing. It's like literally the on the court pairing just doesn't work to me. But I do, with that said, I do think they deserve credit for beating Boston. Obviously the Tatum injury sucks, but they were up 3-1 once that happened. I know he got hurt in game four, but like they had control of that game when his injury happens. Like they were almost certainly winning that series, even with Tatum healthy. So that they deserve credit for that, because up until that point, the Celtics were title favorites. So they deserve credit for that, and why I would, unless like a Giannis trade for them materializes, I think they should just run it back, because I think they're talented enough. If you just find the right pieces, like, I don't know. As it always is with Cat, it's like a push and pull thing of acknowledging the great stuff while also like trying to mitigate the stuff that is maddening with his game. Oh, the other thing was like him committing weird fouls was the other thing like people got frustrated with. It's like, yeah, would you like to steal Dane's stray voltage term? You can have that one, Nick. That one's yours.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll talk a little bit more revisit the Cat trade, I think, one more time, kind of wrap it up here in our next sessions. But yeah, you know, it's been a wild season. And I think, you know, as we kind of move forward, we got to hear from Tim Connelly today. Well, as we're recording today on Monday, today is June 2nd. And he spoke to the media, including Ryan, who's there on hand today to ask some questions about kind of the future moving forward. Ryan, you know, we'll move into our next segment for How or Foul.
Yeah, so I'm going to play this clip from Tim at his media availability talking about his future with the organization, because he doesn't have an opt-out this offseason to potentially leave the organization, but he was asked about that today.
With your contract situation, just what do you see for your future here in Minnesota?
As long as Twin City Pioneer Press is here. super happy here. It's been great. It's not just as working with the team, but just this whole community. So it really feels like home. I think you guys are stuck with me.
So that's not like a, yes, I am going to be back. I think the key line there is obviously, I think you guys are stuck with me. It to me, it's clear that he will be back. I think the only potential out is like the ownership hasn't officially transferred yet. The board of governors will meet, I believe, this month to vote and officially transfer it to Mark and Alex. And when that happens, the expectation is that Tim Connolly will sign some sort of long-term deal to be the president of the Timberwolves for a while here. But the holler foul I had for this was Tim Connolly staying long-term is the best for the Timberwolves. Leo?
I'm going to go with Hal. I talked about this earlier. If you kind of close your eyes and envision which NBA franchises you think are the most inept, take your pick. You know, Hornets, Kings, Magic, whoever you want, Clippers. Now, most of these teams have gone through at least like 2 to 3 president of basketball operation changes in the last 5 years. Now, Tim Connolly for the Wolves has only been here for 3 years. He's delivered 2 straight Western Conference finals and also another playoff first round playoff exit to the eventual champ Nuggets to boot. But you could say that it's just Ant. But the reality is that, you know, Ant needed the right pieces around him, whether it's players, whether it's coaches, or even like a assistant GM team around him. And so, you know, you think about, okay, well, things have been better if Ryan Saunders was still the coach here, you know, instead of Chris Finch. But things have been better if they had, you know, D'Angelo Russell instead of Mike Conley and Nikhil Alexander Walker. I mean, these are things that the former front office regime, which again was still doing pretty well. This is a front office team that, you know, drafted Ant, that drafted, you know, Jaden, that selected Nas. I mean, that was already above average bar than what we're used to in Minnesota. You think about what Tim Connolly has done since then. He's supplemented that and even taken him to the next level. So I think absolutely there's no question about it. I mean, having Tim here long-term is for sure what's best for the Wolves. And again, I have to ask fans the same thing. Those who are maybe frustrated with, well, he hasn't brought a championship here in 3 years. It's like, okay, if it's not Tim Connolly, who realistically would you be wanting here to run the show as president of basketball operations? So, you know, for me, it's a Hal. What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, it's a pretty obvious Hal here that Tim is the best fit for the organization right now. Obviously, we've talked about the success that they've had recently. And I've been thinking of the trio of Connolly, Finch, and Ant as the general manager, basically, the head coach, and the best player. That trio is by far the best trio. I think Finch is the greatest head coach in the history of the team, him or Flip. Connolly is head and shoulders the best general manager they've had in the history of the team. And Ant is either has a chance to be the best or certainly the second best player that this franchise has ever seen. So to have those three like locked in as your like three mastheads of the organization, I just think like you're already in a good spot, and it'll be up to Connolly and Finch and all these guys to kind of round out the rest of the organization, business wise, front office wise, assistant coaches, other starting players. But like the hard part is done. You got the three mainstays. Now can you support everyone to try to go win a title? Next one. Next, Tim talked about the three potential free agents, Julius Randle, Naz Reid, and Nikhil. Got a couple clips of him talking about that.
The goal is to keep everybody. And what's neat is the players are all very happy here. They love coaches, they have to love the teammates, they love the community. So when the player wants to be here and the team wants to have him back, there's always room for optimism. Certainly these guys have finite windows to earn a lot of money. So we're very appreciative of what the market might look like, but we're pretty cautiously optimistic that we're in a good place with all the guys. And again, most importantly, they want to be here.
Yeah, so biggest thing for that one to me is that he's echoing what the players said in their own exit interviews, is that not only do they want players back while acknowledging the financial realities of that might not be possible, but that players want to play here, which certainly at other points in Timberwolves history has not been the case.
Yeah, we talk constantly. I mean, especially with Nas, it's neat doing this the second time, really having a relationship where I can say anything to him, he can say anything to me. You got to be honest with guys. We're not trying to win deals. We're trying to build a really good basketball team full of really good guys and reward them for their strong play and who they are as individuals. So those conversations have been constant, all extremely positive. Again, who knows what's going to happen, but we're certain that both sides want the same thing, and you know, generally those things work out.
I played that one because he specifically brings up Nas when asked, have they been talking with the potential free agents? So it's interesting to hear Nas be the first person that he brings up, which I think kind of makes sense with, I think we would agree Nas is like the first person we want them to try to go get. And then a third clip about the free agents here.
Yeah, again, it's I would tell you I was optimistic even if I was lying to you, but we're pretty optimistic. those guys are really, really good players who play really well together. They really like the coaching staff. I mean, Nas is a cult hero here for good reason. So, we have nothing but positive indicators that both these guys will be in Bulls jerseys next season.
So interesting, he brings up Nas again when talking about the free agents here. So I think that to me that's a little bit of a tip of the cap. But for a howl or foul, the Wolves need to pick only one of Julius or Nas moving forward.
I'm going with howl for this one. I think even though I will say that I am a lukewarm Julius Randle supporter since like the first day he got traded here, it does pain me to say this a little bit. So I think it is true that long-term wise, you can't have both of them here. Now, I think if the Wolves want to improve around the margin, especially this upcoming season, you have to make sacrifices somewhere. I mean, as much as we're like, oh, well, why don't we trade Terrence Shannon Jr., Rob Dillingham, and Jalen Clark for Giannis? Like, I mean, salaries be damned. I mean, let's save that. Like, you know, the truth of the matter is that they're not, that's not the same value that they have. So they have to give up someone that has value. And Julius is, I think everyone could agree, has vastly, vastly increased his trade value this season as it was before he came here. So, you know, there's value in what you can get back with them, you know, whether you're a KD supporter or, you know, whatever it is. Now, I think having two bigs that are weak on defense, I think that's where it kind of hurts, because Julius is, I think, and Tim Connelly talks about it in one of his answers, I believe, is that, you know, Julius was a great defender, especially in isolation. I mean, not great, but above average defender, I would say, especially in the first two rounds of the playoffs. And despite that, he's overall still net negative, because again, that focus wanes off the ball. He's, you know, slow on rotations. He's kind of, you know, when he doesn't get a call on the offensive end, he struggles to get back in transition. And then Nas, again, for all that we love Nas for, he's also kind of he was a weak link in the OKC Thunder series, especially on defense. So he was just committing bad fouls and all that. So my caveat in saying that, Howell's that it might not be something that you have to do this season, choosing between one or two of them, or this upcoming season. But I think sooner than later, they will have to pick between one of those two, because I think it's untenable to have both of them as your starting front court, on your starting front court to be a championship team.
Yeah, I went foul for that exact reason that you said. I was more looking at it that they don't have to choose between them this offseason. I think that they can be in more of a mode of let's retain our talent, retain our best players, in which would be Julius and Nas, and then you can figure it out via trades or via whatever, which one you want to start long term. Nas said in his exit interview that he does view himself as like a starting caliber player, that it wouldn't, that he ultimately would be able to come off the bench if the circumstances played out that way, but that I think the subtext also was there that like he would want to start, and that would be something that he would consider as far as coming back to the Wolves, going to a different team, etc. So I don't think that it needs to happen now, but it's hard to see like the championship version of this team with like both Julius and Nas, just given like the limitations. I mean, I don't think that's a lineup that like if you trade Rudy and like your starting front court is Nas and Julius, I think that wouldn't necessarily be something you'd want. So I agree with you long term that that probably has to be worked out somehow, but I think that for this offseason you can kind of get away with it by bringing him back. All right, next thing from Tim's press conference I wanted to touch on was just the overall sense of like, do they need to get better, do they need sweeping changes, or are we gonna kind of closer to run it back or make changes on the margin? So here's Tim again with a question by Jace Frederick here.
Tim, you talk about the puncher's chance thing. We've seen the last few years there's like a difference between capable of making a run and capable of winning the title. Mm-hmm. If OKC loses to Boston last year, does that change the way you view things at all? Of like, okay, there's a clear championship contention, and then there are teams that can make conference finals runs that we've seen. There have been more sneaky ones of those, but maybe not as much.
Not really. I would probably disagree, respectfully. I think there's years when the team that wins championships not the best team. You know, the number came up, the matchups were favorable, or there's an injury here or there. I'm pretty aligned to if you're a Final Four team, and we should be, we want to be a home court playoff team generally, that's pretty important as well. You can win a championship.
So I think Jace's question there is important, because I think what he's trying to get at there is, like, you guys lost, you guys were not particularly close to beating Oklahoma City. Does that make you view your team as not close to a championship, despite, like, the being seven wins away from it with Deem? And I think what Tim Connolly is saying here is, like, not necessarily, like, you make the Final Four, you have a puncher's chance. They'll be open to a big move if it presents itself, but it's not something that they're going into the off season not necessarily needing, because they do view themselves as some sort of close to a championship title. One more clip here.
My druthers, I'm always kind of erring the side of continuity. I think patience in professional sports is largely non-existent, and those organizations that can show patience tend to have a really high level of success. But patience shouldn't lead to risk aversion. There's something that we have to shake it up, and we think it can make us a better team. We're certainly open to that. But we returned the core of a team last year, and we made the Cat and Dante trades. So it took us a while, I think, to get acclimated, and we look forward to returning the core next year, and hopefully, go a bit further.
Interesting, he calls it the Cat and Dante trade. kind of missing a player in there, but I think what that shows you is that. In a vacuum, Connolly prefers continuity, but that continuity doesn't always win out over a good deal or a good path. So that kind of push and pull of, like, running it back, quote unquote, or making a big deal is interesting to me. And that's the howl or foul. The Wolves need to make a big deal in this offseason. Leo, what's your view?
My wife gets annoyed with me about this because I take things so literal sometimes, but the howl or foul topic of the Wolves need to make a big change in the offseason, I'm going with foul because I don't think they need to. Now, as much as I trust Tim Connolly and, if a huge move is something that he feels like we should do, then, I'll trust them. But I think something that really disrupts the core of the team, so that means that Jaden's going out or Nas is not really included as a part of this core moving forward, it scares me. It scares me the most because it's something that I think that could really disrupt Ant's feelings towards staying here long, long term, especially if it doesn't result in a championship the next, like, 2 to 3 seasons when, Ant's contract's starting to run up for that max, 3 years from now. We're talking about, all right, he's got a year or two left, Wolves, his best friends on the team aren't here anymore. They kind of exhausted a lot of their draft capital. Yeah, they got some young guys, but they're kind of taking a couple steps back. I mean, do you think the Wolves are going to make the conference finals again next year with this team or even with the new team? Who knows? But if they don't and they're taking steps back, then I think, yes, winning a championship is the most important thing. And I think Ant is the closest thing that we have, or the best thing that we have going towards winning a championship. So if we lose him, or jeopardize his feelings of wanting to stay here for the next, 10 plus years, then I'm a little bit out on. So I think it's a foul for me. I don't think it's they need to make a big move this offseason.
Yeah, I kind of reverse of our last topic. I went how in the sense of long term. I do think they need to make some sort of big trade or big move to win the championship. I just think, obviously, I would be pretty bullish about this team just running it back. Maybe you lose Na and you're filling his role with the young guys. I would still feel pretty good about this team kind of going back to Western Conference Finals if it shook out like it did this year. But ultimately, I think they'd be still a clear step behind Oklahoma City, who's gonna roll back their team from this year. And if they want to make additions on the margins with all the litany of picks, they can. So in that sense, I do think that they need a big trade, but I don't think they need to make one for the sake of making one. They have a good enough roster that they don't need to do that. Lastly, we'll kind of revisit the Cat trade one last time. Like you said, what Tim's view on that is a full season later.
Yeah, I think it was a win-win. I mean, it's funny. I text with Cat. I probably get more emotional watching their games than our games because it's Cat had such a great playoffs and such a great year in New York. But I'm not a believer in there's one winner, 29 losers. I think too often that's a narrative that we all run with. I told that to our team after the game. The Knicks had the best year they've had in 25 years. So it was really fun to watch.
Yes, I mean, that's basically what you've been saying, Leo, is that it's not like a zero-sum game. You can have a good season without winning the title. You can there's other things to be gained from besides just winning the championship. And I think the Knicks and Wolves both fall into that. Well, they're not like glad to lose, that there's some stuff to be gained. But I did want to take one last kind of trip down the cat trade path and ask, would you do the cat trade over again in hindsight? And for me, it's a pretty obvious yes, a pretty obvious how. Because I think if they don't make that trade, while they probably have a few extra wins in the regular season just because of that continuity, and maybe they're like the 2 or 3 seed, honestly, I think if they don't make the trade. But it's hard to see how that Oklahoma City series goes any different if they have Cat on the roster. And I talk about more wins. There's a half-season chance for the 4 seed, and we're doing this thought experiment with Denver, and they're probably out in the second round. Like, they don't get that fortunate seeding that they got. So they, this season, I think we kind of were worried when they made that trade, like there was going to be a step back this season. And it was a little bit in the regular season, but in the playoffs, it wasn't. And now their cap situation is just in a much better spot. Obviously, Julius expiring, Nas expiring, if they decline player options, isn't great. And that's worrisome to lose those guys. They just have so many more branching paths. I didn't pull up a clip, but Connelly talked a lot about the second apron being pretty prohibitive, not just financially, but with trades they can make. Well, if they still had Cat, they'd still be in that second apron and would just have very few avenues to get out. So while I think you and I were as, I think we both saw the vision, but we were fairly frustrated at the trade overall. It's hard to say that it hasn't worked out and that you wouldn't do it again. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you on this one. It's a howl, and I think it's just how quickly people develop amnesia about old takes. For one, we harken back to the Rudy Gobert trade. I mean, shoot, how many years ago is that? And we're still talking about it now. But, you know, it was chump change in picks, and it was labeled the worst trade of all time. You know, then you have Western Conference Finals level Cat that was traded for, quote unquote, just future cap flexibility. And, oh, man, second worst trade ever. I mean, you can argue which team is set up better for the future, but when you make a trade like that where both teams make the conference finals, it's kind of like what Tim said. It's hugely successful for both ways. And there's a quote that has always stuck with me, and I read this, or someone told it to me, like, you know, over 10 years ago, something about how growing up and maturity isn't always necessarily about like letting things go or forgiving people. It's about thinking in non-binaries. It's not about thinking of, okay, well, it's this or that, or it's yes or no, or it's a win or a loss. And I really think about that when it comes to the Cat trade, where it's like, well, yeah, it's not like, oh, well, you know, was it the best thing for us, or was it the worst thing for us? It's neither. It's always going to be somewhere in the middle. And again, could we have maybe made it to conference finals with Cat this year? Yeah, maybe. And, you know, could we have made it, you know, without him? Obviously we did. So, you know, I think that, you know, everything is, again, we're getting a little cliche, you know, cursive quotes on the wall type of category here, but where it's like everything happens for a reason type of thing, is that, you know, we traded it. And again, obviously for basketball reasons, it worked out. And for cap reasons, it did work out as well too. So yeah, like you said, we're in a way better place in terms of our flexibility, what we want to do. You know, I'm happy for Cat that he didn't get sent to like a Charlotte or Washington or something like that, that he's actually playing in front of, you know, a lot of his friends and family members out, you know, in that New Jersey area. He's playing for a big market team where, again, yes, they are kind of roasting him. But at the same time, I mean, they were quick to really prop him up as well, too. Like, he is, you know, he is, to be fair, getting some of his flowers as well, too. And I'm just really happy to see that for him. So, yeah, it's hard to think of another trade where, like, both teams are like, you know what, yes, we were a little frustrated with how the season ended or how specific players played from the trade. But, you know, I think both teams wouldn't undo it for sure.
Yeah, it's been fun to watch him from afar, and I kind of laughed. Back-to-back season, Cat eliminates the defending champions. So I guess if things play out like I think we think, I guess for that to happen a third year in a row, it'd be Knicks over Thunder next year's finals for that to, or maybe the Pacers win and they beat them in the Eastern Finals or whatever. But
or Cat comes back to Minnesota and they eliminate the Thunder. You thought about that one, Ryan?
I have not. That doesn't seem like a thing. But, yeah, I mean, thinking about, like, non-binary, even, like, I think it's fair to like view the trade as a success and also just view it as a bummer because like you enjoyed watching Cap player. Like I think that's fair to like separate those two. But before we wrap up, we can do a quick final stuff. For me, I think Thunder and five until it's not. Like they're just so dominant. The Pacers are a low turnover team, which I think helps. And I'm interested to see if I think it's been crazy how good OKC has been at home. So I think if the Pacers can split in Oklahoma City these first two, I think then we've got ourselves a series. But if the Thunder kind of roll these first two games, it's hard not to see it as a gentleman's sweep like it was against the Wolves.
Yeah, Ryan, my crystal ball is broken. Now I went 13 for 13 in predictions the Wolves' first 13 playoff games, and that I missed game four, but technically I got game five right as well too. So just came up short on one. So you can take my predictions as just trash for now. But I'm a zag here, and I'm gonna say give me Pacers in six. I'm gonna go with the shocking result. I'm going to go the opposite of what I think. Tyrese Halliburton is for sure going to be the hardest point guard matchup that they're going to have to deal with in the playoffs so far. I think the Pacers also have the most depth of any of the teams that they played so far in the playoffs as well, too. And so I think that'll factor in. And I think it's one of those a lot of people have doubted the Pacers, man. I mean, pretty much in all three of their series so far, it's like, nah, I don't know. The buck stops here. Yeah, sure, you could beat a Dameless, beat up. Zombie Bucks team, and yeah, you could kind of advance now that Jason Tatum's out of the way, but the Knicks have better starters and more star power, but who's to say? So give me Pacers at six.
Yeah, I personally don't see it, but admire the gusto to pick it. It'd be a shocking result. I saw a fun stat that was like the only two teams in NBA history that won the finals with their best player being acquired via a trade were basically the 08 Celtics with Garnett and the 19 Raptors with Kawhi. And then this year with either Shea on the Thunder or Halliburton on the Pacers. Like these are not, we're also going to have our seventh different champion in seven different years. That's amazing. I was kind of thinking about, I knew this in my head, but from basically 1999 to now, or really until like the Nuggets made the finals, only basically the Lakers, the Spurs, and the Mavs won the Western Conference all those years. Every single one of them, those three teams won, with the exception of Durant's Oklahoma City team. And now it's basically like if you throw Oklahoma City into that mix with those other four, then Denver is the only outlier. Like the West has been down, and then Phoenix too. Like we're in a new Western Conference era. Like the teams from Texas and California aren't just winning it all the time. And I guess these teams represent that.
They call it the Paul George finals, right? I mean, both these teams traded Paul George, and it really kind of set off their future in terms of Paul George became Sabonis, which became Tyrese Halliburton. Obviously we know Shea for Paul George. So, maybe the Sixers are on something where it's like, hey, well, we can't trade Paul George unless you get Paul George. So maybe that's what they're doing here. I'm super excited. I mean, I love the parody when people are like, oh, man, it's hard to follow all these teams. I'm like, good, go away. Like, I want to hear the stories of the other 29 teams in the franchise instead of just like, the one team that's always just kind of dominating all the time.
Yeah, and it's always fun with really any franchise that has any sort of success to kind of follow the entrails. I know, like, if we do this for the Wolves, like, we talk about Kevin Love turning into Wiggins, turning into D'Lo, turning into Mike. Like, that's a fun storyline for us. And like you mentioned, the Paul George trades have now both in ways set up these franchises. But even like Westbrook leaving for Chris Paul, that has effects on what the Thunder are doing now. They won the lottery, or they moved up in the lottery to get Chet. Like, it's there's fun storylines abound in this finals, and I still just think the Thunder are going to roll because it's hard to view it as any other way. All right.
Yeah.
I think we're ready to put a bow on 24-25 season and look forward for the 2025 off season. Should be a crazy one. Unlike last year, obviously they make the Cat trade late in the season, but I think we all kind of viewed it as like, they didn't have a lot of options. We're going to roll with what we got here. This season is, there's so many different tentacles it'll go, and this podcast will be here to kind of break that down. I do want to thank everyone that's either listened to us throughout the season in our first year doing this, or read any of our stuff at Canis. I really appreciate it. It doesn't go unnoticed. It's been a crazy season. Thank you to all the guests that came on with me for second episodes during the week. It was a wild ride, a long ride, a little bit tired, ready for some rest, ready for to sit down and watch some Lynx without necessarily having to worry about as they cruise to 7-0 or watch the Twins as they do annoying Twins things. I'm excited to take a break, but not too long of a break from Wolves basketball.
Yeah, it's been a fun time. And again, really thank you all for listening to this. Again, we're just getting started here as well, too. We're hoping to bring you more content during the summer. Obviously, again, we want you all to enjoy your time, relax away. But you know, we're going to come back with even more and cooler ideas moving forward. And we really appreciate y'all. Thank you, Ryan, especially for being kind of the brain. This is your brainchild. And I just appreciate you bringing me along for the ride with this.
Yeah, for sure. Before we go, let's give our two words to kind of wrap up as we always do. Mine is chaotic summer. Kind of already talked about it, but there's a lot going on. They got the three main free agents, likely if Nas and Randall are opting out of their deals. And there's a Kevin Durant of it all that we didn't really touch. And I think that's fine because it's been talked about ad nauseum, but that's certainly something. And kind of what Tim said didn't dissuade me of this, that they're going to try at that if the picks and the players make sense. But it could go a lot of ways. They could just run it back with re-signing two of their three free agents and go that way. I don't think that's crazy. And or they could trade Randall or really anybody besides Ant and Jaden are probably on the table, to be honest. So a lot going on. Leo, how about you?
I'm going to go the opposite to you on this one, Ryan. It's going to be a gentle summer. Gentle summer is my two words. I think the biggest moves will be made internally, whether it's going back to starting Dante again and really trying to get him in sync with Ant. I don't know if that's the best idea, but maybe it's Rob really starting to get more minutes now, phasing into the starting lineup. Maybe it's getting TJ and Jalen more real meaningful minutes while they're healthy. I think long gone will be the days of just the top eight heavy minutes. And I think, Conley and Finch are seeing that, and they are putting their words into actions from the exit interviews and the press conferences. I think, Mike might be fading into Joe Ingles type role, and it's going to open up more minutes for everybody else in a new role. So I think it'll be internal growth that's going to happen. So I'm looking forward to a gentle summer.
Yeah. And I'm sure it'll somehow be both of ours. It'll be both chaotic and gentle, but we'll be here if something breaks. The player options are at the end of the month. So that'd be probably the finals are going to be what June is about, and late June, early July is when we'll really start hearing some like official off-season news. But this pod's going to probably take a good week or two break off right here at the end of the season. When the finals end, or if there's some, probably when the finals end, it will either me and you, or I have Travis who covered the Thunder is going to come on and talk about just kind of what OKC's gone through, assuming they do win the title. That'll be a good get for this pod. And then later in the summer, I got a bunch of really good guests that are going to come through this podcast and talk about probably Wolves history and whatever's going on this summer. So we're going to take some time off, but we won't be gone long.
Yeah, we'll be back. We'll be back. But y'all get some rest as well, too. Again, I recommend you tune in. Like Ryan said, some Lynx games. There's still plenty of great basketball to watch.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a good night.
Get home, drive safe.
Go. Ayoo!